this is...
Wow! What a week.
What a week. Politics.
Welcome to Wow, What a Week, hashtag Politics. You may have seen a number of people on social media stating that they stand with certain organizations and countries. Well, we can't always tell you where our next guest stands. But what we do know, though, is that he does evaluate many avenues before he picks a spot. Please give a warm welcome back to Botsang Modimo wa me Muilwa. Brother man.
Good morning, Fresh.
Very nice, Madiba shirt.
Thank you. Hey, this shirt got me into trouble this week in court.
What happened?
I was in the labor court on Thursday, and the presiding officer, the judge said to me, I should stop coming to a court with nice shirts and not dress properly.
So what does that mean?
No, I was not wearing a jacket.
Oh, but why do you need a jacket in court?
Well, that's the court rules, my man. If you are lawyers and attorneys...
Oh, were you representing
I'm
yourself?
I'm representing myself. So I was supposed to have worn a jacket. But I thought, you know, Madiba has set the standard.
You thought you'd charm her
charm the justice, and she read me a riot. And I profusely apologized. And she said, next time I must come to court dressed up properly.
Yo. Okay, so if I represent myself in court, I can't go in my golf shirt?
No, you can't. The court regulations don't allow.
What if I can't afford a jacket?
Well, raise it with the court. You know, they may end up saying, do an application that you can't afford a jacket. Everything goes with an application.
Clearly.
You must satisfy the court that you can't afford a jacket, or you can't even borrow your uncle's or your friend's jacket.
Yo. Or can I, Uncle? Oh, I'll ask Uncle Gwede if I could use his jacket. Well, one of the ones he was wearing that was flopping there.
Uncle Gwede's one will be two times the size of you. But anyway, I see you're saying I'm not taking sides. I do take sides. I take the justice side.
We'll find out soon enough, in fact. In fact, speaking of applications, it seems like the NFP are back in the news after having been banned by the IEC. What's going on with that story?
Well, that emanates on Wednesday evening. The NFP National Freedom Party,
yes sir,
came back with a statement to say they are convinced they will contest the 2024 national elections, which include provincial elections as well. And this emanates from an old case, you know, that even went to an extent of sitting at the Constitutional Court, where NFP members or deployees or candidates after the last local government elections, they were found to be wanting with criminal records. Mm-hmm. The party itself did not account for the allocation of monies that, you know, the National Assembly and the IEC allocates to political parties. So they have to account. They have to provide financial statements, how they use constituency monies and things like that. So for failure of the NFP to do that, and the rules are very clear of the Election Electorate Act, to say if you fail to comply and to disclose and to provide books and reports, you will be struck off the roll of the IEC.
Okay.
So they are appealing that process, and they are convinced that, look, we have less than 12 months to go into elections. They are convinced that this matter will be resolved before the next elections.
Sure.
They are preparing for campaign, or the political parties have started campaigning now, whether on media or even doing lists of their candidates. So they can't field the previous candidates, obviously, because they've been banned by the IEC, the previous candidates. So they must come up with new people.
Okay.
And now, the difficulty they are facing with is the time frame between now and finding candidates that will appeal to the constituency. It's a bit of a challenge. But they are convinced, the leadership of the NFP is convinced, that they will be on the ballot paper come elections of 2024.
Let's move to Action SA. They've just announced that Kwena Mangope is the new Northwest election candidate.
Yes, I actually need to address that guy. I don't know whether he was already. I think he is General Kwena Mangope.
Okay.
He was approached by Action SA leader, Mr. Emmen Mashaba, some few months back to stand as their candidate in the Northwest Province. And
sure.
He accepted, and now they announce him officially during the course of this week that we are focusing on, that Kwena Mangope is going to be the Action SA premier candidate for the Northwest Province. I can tell you, with what has happened with the ruling African National Congress for all the years in the Northwest, he may pull some good numbers for Action SA. One, it is because of his family background. He is the son of the former, you know, Bantustan Buputatswana
leader. Oh, so he's Hosi Mangope's son.
He's Hosi Mangope's son.
Okay.
And also...
Does he speak like him?
I don't know.
Bare, Mosadi wami, raitse sekhoa. Leia, stand up. Leia, sit down. So he's Mama Leia's son.
Yes,
that
yes,
is so dope.
Yes. So but Kwena Mangope also, I can tell you that he's got credentials on his own, despite the fact that he is a Mangope.
Okay, so he's built himself.
He has built himself, not really politically, but he has served government in the South African National Defence Force.
Sure.
And he, you know, he served the country, and he actually never wanted to be seen as a Mangope, the child of Kgosi Mangope of Buputatswana. He served the African National Congress led government, and now he has joined Action SA. And I think he can bring good numbers, especially in the Northwest, where the people are disgruntled. People are very unhappy with the ANC in the Northwest.
They feel
province.
Forgotten. Almost.
They feel forgotten.
As a friend of mine who lives in Mahikeng said, I feel like we're being punished for whatever issues they had with Mangope.
But then the ANC did not help itself, because they did not even do anything closer to what Mangope was doing positively. Not even close. I don't want to say equal to or better than Mangope. They did worse than Mangope. So the people of the Northwest are saying, even a Bantustan like Lucas Manyane Mangope, who was bad, he did better than the ANC. And therefore would have rather lived and suffered under the Bantustan Mangope than the ANC. I mean, that's a very tall statement. And many of the people in the Northwest are very unhappy across the board with what has happened and transpired in the new dispensation. So Action SA may be going to throw a very good punch in the north, especially in areas like Motsweding and rural areas of the former Buputatswana, the Northwest, where the Mangope Party did well even after the 1994. Remember, they contested elections after 1994 at some stage, and there were people who still cited and see themselves as a regional party as a provincial party. But he's coming with a new flag, with a new name, Action SA, and he's been, you know, teaming up with people like Herman Mashaba. I think language proficiency, he's the son of the Northwest province, unlike people coming from another province and being deployed to...
Being parachuted
to the,
in.
Parachuted to the Northwest. So that's where Action SA is, with the Northwest. And I think they're treading very carefully in announcing candidates. I don't think they will contest in all provinces. Maybe with money, because this thing works about, can you afford to register for a province where you know you will get 1,000 votes and you pay hundreds of thousands or tens of thousands to can register.
Hey, does it make business, elections business sense?
Exactly. So parties that know that they are weak in some places, why contest in that place?
Oh, then just sell more hair products. And instead of food parcels, do hair parcels.
He's not selling hair products anymore. We don't perm anymore. He's selling books now.
No, but you can still make a hair moisturizer. You still need braids to be moisturized. It's not just about the SKL.
Don't make hair man to go back to hair business. He's a politician now.
But his name says it, hair man, Mashaba. So,
yeah.
So Johannesburg has a problem with abandoned and or hijacked buildings.
Yes.
I think Durban also has a similar problem. But there's a report from 2014.
Exactly.
About hijacked buildings and what needs to happen.
Well,
it's 9 years later. What's going on?
Tato, you even mentioned Durban and Joburg. I think this thing is mushrooming. It's everywhere. Ekurhuleni has the same problem.
Sure.
Swane, where I come from, has the same problem in Sunnyside. But with Joburg, and Action SA is crying in DA about this, is that they knew, they took action regarding this matter once the buildings of Hillbrow and others started being occupied. There was no rent being paid and nobody controlled them. They went and they conducted an investigation, a study, and a report was presented to the council in 2014, which was approved, which identified what the problems were, what are the challenges, who are the potential building hijackers. So the Johannesburg, city of Joburg, a municipality knew as way back as 2014 what are the problems. They were, and they did focus They did nothing with it, and it has come up to bite them and catch up with them now, where 70 people lost their lives in one of the buildings that was specifically identified as hijacked or unsafe. So now with the commission of inquiry that the Premier of the Gauteng province, Mr. Banyaza Lusufi, has instituted to investigate what actually transpired with the 70 people, the DA and other opposition parties, and like Action SA, are trying to say, why institute a commission of inquiry? Yes, lives were lost. And I'm one of the people who says, yes, lives were lost. We did speak about it. To say, what's going to happen now? It's going to be a commission of inquiry. A retired judge is going to make some millions out of this. Those lives will not come back. And that's exactly what we predicted they will do. But nobody is sitting there and saying, how come City of Joburg, whether it was the Action SA that was in charge, or the ANC, or any political party that has been on the hot seat, that has changed mayors like no other city in the Republic of South Africa, how come none of these political parties have implemented the 2014 recommendations and the findings of the 2014? Would have not been where we are now. So instead of having a commission of inquiry, waste the money and go to reinvent the wheel to say what killed those people, what caused the fire, why were they in there? You have a report that predicted that if we don't do ABC, we are risking fire, we are risking hazards, we are risking the building collapsing, and many other things. So it has recommendations, and the answers are there, what actually transpired. But we want to spend a couple of millions from the province to go and find out why people died, when we know actually why people died. We were told as residents of Joburg that if we don't contain and control the hijacked buildings, people will die there because a building may collapse.
Sure.
Fire may broke out. And why do we want a commission of inquiry? Yes, people's life, I don't want to be insensitive. People's life are very important. But will this commission of inquiry...
We know exactly what the problem is.
We know exactly what the problem is.
And so we've known.
We should be dealing with the problem. We have known. So instead of these political parties who are in... They deny that it's a coalition, but it is a coalition without a principle. Instead of them wasting time trying to figure out what killed those people, they must go to that report. It was done by experts, engineers, you know, town planners. They must go there and implement to avoid this happening in the next building or any other one. They must implement. I would, if I was Banyaza, Mr. Lusufi, I would have instructed the MEC of COCTA in Gauteng to tell Joburg to implement the outcome of that report. They can amend it to switch 2023. They can amend the report and add new developments. But implement corrective measures instead of investigating what you were supposed to know.
But we're not in the habit of implementing stuff. I mean, I'll give you an example. I mean, even just with what's happening with the anti-doping agency, that 2 years ago said countries need to come up with legislation that governs doping and anti-doping in sport. We've known for 2 years.
Yeah.
This week we risked not being able to sing the national anthem.
Or fly the flag.
Or fly the flag or perform under the name South Africa. Because doping legislation is not what it should be. And you know, I love Zizi. I've loved Zizi Kodwa since Youth League days 23 years ago. But, you know, for him to now want to defend his predecessors, who clearly slept on the job. Someone slept on the job.
I felt sorry for Zizi, actually.
Because now he must...
It's not his doing.
That's what I'm saying. He must now defend his predecessors, who've had 2 years.
But Fresh, we spoke about how... And I was very, you know, brutal about it, how the previous Minister of Arts, Sports and Culture has failed this country. And now he's an ambassador in the Europe capital of arts, sports and culture, France. You understand? I mean, he focused on heavy erecting a pole that the president had to call him to, hey, stop with that pole or flag that is costing millions. When, and this is what I always tell people, our political office bearers, they like microphones and cameras. They want to be in the limelight. The previous minister was forever on television, just like the minister of police. Instead of focusing on policy positions. That's the duty of a political office bearer, to focus on developing, amending, correcting policies of the country. The Ministry of Arts and Culture has failed to do that in sport. Now we have been faced the risk of what we have explained. We cannot sing our national anthem at a cricket, you know, a tournament. We cannot fly our flag. We cannot sing the national anthem. It is because the Minister of Arts, Sports and Culture has failed to do their duty to amend, even to start the process. If we're going to go back to the international bodies and say, in South Africa, our process of amending our laws takes time because of our parliamentary processes. But here we are.
Sure.
When instructions were given, we initiated the process. We didn't do anything. We were sitting here dancing, singing slogans and being on television instead of doing our job. And where's the President in this instance? The president, instead of calling his minister, his subordinate, to say, you failed to do your job. It's like, no, I'll deploy you as an ambassador to France. There's an indictment in their duties in this instance. And shame, sorry for Zizikora, he's not only defending his predecessor, he's defending his fellow comrade from the ruling party, and he has to talk in a tongue. Luckily, he's a good speaker. You know, he used to be a spokesperson. He has to speak in a tongue that will defend and protect the party as well as the government.
But I'm generally loving Zizi's energy, though, that in the short space of time that he's been Sports, Arts and Culture Minister, I almost feel like he's been more present in the moment and wanting to do more than
he's
what has
like
previously
a fire extinguisher. It's a shame. The guy has been resolving problems. Yeah. If you remember the cases from Banyana Banyana, Bafana Bafana Squad, and all he's the poor man is actually dealing with problems. Luckily, he's young. You see, that's how nice it is to deploy young people. He still has the energy. Imagine if he was a Madala like Gwede, he would not be coping in dealing with all this, being stressed by athletes, because he's dealing with artists, he's dealing with athletes, and he's also reachable. One thing I've noticed about Zizikwada, he's accessible. That's
absolutely
the word I wanted to use.
Yes.
I've seen even music artists or actors complaining, and he's accessible. And I think he's doing a good job. He must just talk to the artist and say, can you help me move from here moving forward?
Let's make this work for all of us.
If I become a political office bearer, I will actually work intertwined with affected people. In this instance, Zizikwada must not rely on fellow cabinet ministers and fellow comrades. He must rely on artists.
His constituency.
They will guide him better. They know better. They are on the ground. And that's why when Banyana Banyana in some instance had this problem, he went to sit and talk to them in a room. And when he heard that, he went to seek money to help to resolve their problem.
Sure.
He didn't resolve it permanently, but at that moment, thumbs up to Zizikwada.
Be solutions driven.
And let's hope that those who love cricket and they will not be banned from flying the South African flag and in the national anthem. We have the game. Remember, this is
no, it's not going to happen. I think they've been given
they've been given time to
a reprieve. To sort it out.
But so. We are not supposed to be there, as you said.
Other nations have done it. Other nations have done it.
That's where we are as a nation.
Sure. Speaking of nations, the new census is out, and the SA population has risen 20% to 62 million. In this country.
Am I supposed to say something with those maths figures? Fresh, this is very disturbing. And I'll tell you
why. Why are you disturbed?
One, it makes me think I should not believe those numbers. And I'll give reasons towards that. But two, they may be true. It's disturbing because of the economy of the country is going. Remember, the purpose of a census is to inform the government in planning.
Sure.
How much money you need, how many schools you need, health services, and so. Now, everything else is shrinking. The government is at a moment under austerity measures because we are bankrupt as a nation. Thanks to the sixth administration of South Africa, we are bankrupt as a nation. Our debt with the IMF and the World Bank, it's worse than ever before than the history of this country. We are bankrupt. The government is on austerity measures. And boom, on top of that, the statistician general, that I said to people, he's not as flamboyant as the previous one. He doesn't have a yellow suit. You know, that's why maybe we are getting into problems. That we moved from 1994 to 40 million people, then we moved to something like 48 million, then 52 million, now 59 million. Now we are at 62 million. And so Again, we have to take into consideration that this 62 million includes foreign nationals living in South Africa and documented.
But we're told it's only 3% of that.
But please, what is 3% of that? That's why I say I don't believe the figures, because we know factually, and Home Affairs can come and attest to that, there are more than 4 million Zimbabweans. Actually, to the Zimbabwean Representation Committee, they say there are more than 5 million Zimbabweans living here, of which Home Affairs says almost 2 million. We know they are here. We know what they are doing. 300,000 odd number. They've got permits, special permits. But we know more than 5 million Zimbabweans live in South Africa. Now, you want to come and tell me that in the 62 million, only about 5 million of the 62 are foreign nationals? That's not possible. When Zimbabwe only takes 5 million, what about Basotho, Mozambicans, Malawians, and the British? Again, statistically, what surprised me was Malawi's on the top five. I'm like, where are these Malawians? Maybe in the mines. But Zimbabwe is number one, followed by Mozambique. Guess who comes next? The British. Double passports. And then Lesotho, then Malawi, or Malawi, then Lesotho.
I'm sure most of those British have probably, you know, converted the pounds to rands and bought a nice mansion in Llandudno in the Cape.
In the Western Cape, yeah. But again, that's the first problem with the statistics, to say the statistician general says approximately 6 million are foreign nationals. So are we saying South Africans have been so busy, we've been giving birth? When you go and you look at health records, the number of marriages, births in public hospitals have gone down, but our numbers are increasing. So where are these people coming from? Who are these people that are 10 million more than the last time that we find ourselves as South Africans? Who are these people? And we are counting or talking about registered people who came forward and declared themselves. You know, say, what about those who were not counted? I know, for example, I was not counted in the census because every time they were passing my street, I was not home. So I'm not even counted in the 62 million. How many Botsangs are there that were not counted? So we may be 70 million in the country, and that's why the fiscus and the services like health, education,
under strain.
It's under strain, including the police. As recent as last week, there was machine gun fire in Mayfair, Johannesburg. Now, you have one policeman servicing 200 people instead of one policeman servicing 50 people. So you are straining the services of government by not having the actual figures. A lot of people are blaming it on border control, to say we failed to control our borders in the past, and also many foreigners giving birth in South Africa. And you know, I've heard somebody saying you go to a school somewhere in Soshanguve, the school from the principal to the teachers and the children, the majority there are Zimbabwean nationals. But I'm saying they have the right to be here because we legitimized that process through our human rights, you know, a part of the constitution for them to be in South Africa. It is a challenge, but it's going to strain the fiscus of the country to a very big extent. When government, for example, the school feeding scheme for minor children at primary, they have to calculate even kids who were born in South Africa 6-7 years back and are starting school now. And these are kids that were legitimately born in South Africa, or even illegitimately born in South Africa, but they are here. And our human rights record says for as long as they are here, we should be humanitarian, we should feed them and take care of them. But I'm saying these statistics, they've demonstrated a very bleak future on what is happening in the country. Coincidentally, the day they were released, I think it was Monday or Tuesday, Tuesday or Wednesday, the day they were released, coincidentally, the bill for the amendment of the Marriage Act also was tabled, you understand, which has an impact on the statistics of the country. It has an impact in a sense that it didn't only change that women who were married previously out of committee of property or with an ANC contract, not the political party, the anti-nuptial contract. They are now going to benefit more regarding this. Coincidentally, when this bill was running, the stats went out. And now, fresh, the kids you had before this amendment, the law says even if you had excluded other things from your spouse, they are now going to benefit from the exclusions.
Oh, yes. Let me tell you why personally I agree with it. Mm-hmm. Because as much as we might have an antenuptial contract, we're married with use the accrual system or whatever, unfortunately, generally in our society, more often than not, the woman, regardless of the contract, becomes the homemaker.
Yeah.
And how do you quantify that?
I don't know why now, Fresh. Let me tell you, me and you have been married.
And if me, let's say me and you are married.
Mm-mm, we won't get married, me and you. We marry our spouses, our women.
But you know, in all fairness, if I was able to build an empire, whether it's all my money because of the accrual system, but when I, as the wife, chose, I will stay home and look after the home. If we divorce, as much as, yes, we have a contract that stipulates this, in all fairness, should I leave with nothing?
But I hear you and I agree with you and the new bill or the new act. Sure. I agree. But I'm saying, either people were not informed, or the court did not enforce what was applicable. At the moment, it's the law that's signed, or it's a bill that's sitting, it's a white paper sitting there. But it has always been there. And I'll use my own divorce case as an example. It has always been a law in the Republic of South Africa that even whether there's a contract or not, if you can quantify your contribution towards building a family or a home.
Yes.
If you can quantify it. I remember in one of the cases I followed, a woman was buying groceries and paying for electricity, sometimes cash. You don't do it through your bank account. Mm. And the court ruled in the past years to say, both of you were earning 10,000 rands. Your cost of living, including your spouse and your kids, were 15,000 rands. So where did the 5,000 rands come from of the basics? Mm. It means the spouse was contributing, even if it was not financially.
Yes.
For her sitting at home, when I became a diplomat, my spouse, my ex-wife, had to quit her job, follow me to live with me abroad.
Mm.
I had, for half of the years she lived with me abroad, two years, half of that, the court ordered me to say, you have to maintain her, not the kids, her, for 1 year so that she can look for a job, keep her on the medical aid because she suffered, she quit her job to go and build a family with you. And I thought that was a fair decision
it's
of
fair.
The court.
It's fair.
But what we are sitting with at the moment is now the court has made that a law. It's no longer an argument only that was presented by a good lawyer in court. It is the law to the benefit of women.
Sure.
And you know what? You know, I've been talking marriage. I don't know if I still want to get married with all these laws being complicated further.
In fact, this is the perfect segue. Speaking of divorce, Eskom chair stepping down. And the last couple of weeks has seen, SOEs seeing leaders literally jumping ship like rats. That have smelt methane, as Minister Mantashe said.
Hey, Minister Mantashe. Minister Mantashe has said two wrong things this week.
He is the king. Sorry, no, he is the tiger of shade, Minister Mantashe.
Hey, Fresh. You know, Tato, it's a sad state of affairs. When the sixth administration came into power, the Tuma Mina, remember, it had the theme New Dawn.
Yes.
And majority of South Africans, or many South Africans, have thought this is a multi-millionaire or billionaire president coming in with a new dawn and a new administration. And I said at that time, in 2018, there is nothing new here. We have a new president who has been deputy president. The entire cabinet is still sitting there. The ruling party still has the same policies that they failed or never implemented, good policies of the ANC, that they did not implement. Why did people expect? I mean, sometimes I know they say common sense is not always common. But really, you've got the same political party, same colors, same policies, same leadership. He didn't change leadership. Mr. Ramaphosa did not change. He was the deputy. He ascended to be the president. He kept more than half of the cabinet that served that time. You understand? And then he moved others around. Pravin Gordhan moved from somewhere to somewhere. And we thought the SOEs that were mentioned several times in the Zondo report to say the SOEs are the source of corruption and collapsing the administration in the country. And I'm one of the people who have been saying that. To say all looters, all corrupt people, they stop eating money from municipalities only and the national government because they were getting caught. They started focusing on SOEs. The SOEs became the milking cow of corrupt people in government. And we knew that. The Zondo report gave us the report. We knew all that. What did the ANC do? What did the government do? Today, we are sitting with the Auditor General report that, listen to this one, none of the SOEs under Minister Pravin Gordhan have got a clean audit. Not even one. Actually, out of seven of them, only two submitted their financial statements. The government, what do you call it, financial year ends on the 31st of March every year. They have 6 months after that. Normally, they should do it within 90 days.
Yeah.
To can submit your financial records or your financial statements of the previous financial year. We are already in October. It's more than 6 months since the financial year ended. Five of the seven SOEs of the state haven't even submitted their papers, let alone if those records meet the requirements. They haven't. Nobody's charged. Nobody's facing the music. The Auditor General goes to Parliament and present a very bleak audit report about the SOEs. And the most important part, he says, the ministry failed to conduct the oversight of the SOEs and nobody's being held accountable. And now in the middle of that, going back to your point in discussion, we have seen of how many SOEs or state, you know, owned enterprises and agencies, the key personnel there. One, they've been having vacancies on key positions, CEOs, CFOs, very strategic positions, including COOs who are supposed to be taking care of operations that makes these SOEs to function. They've been vacant. On top of the vacancies, they are now exceeding, you know, they are running, as Gwede Mantashe puts it, they are running out like mice or rats having have smelled methane in a mine. And we should be sitting and reflecting as a nation. Why are especially black, educated, well decorated, and functional executives or senior managers in government are sitting at home? Count me in on those ones. You know, sitting at home when we know what they are capable of doing, when we know that they can deliver. And they're just leaving this SOEs. So actually, Mr. Makwana is even a little bit of a better one, that he's even giving notice that he will leave after 2 weeks. Others resign with immediate effect. The Transnet CEO, as an example. And nobody is holding the Minister of State-Owned Enterprises accountable for failing to conduct an oversight over these SOEs. And we think they will still function properly. But there's both a story into that, as I will always do to the viewers. You know, fresh on Monday when Mr. Makwana resigned, I read a statement there. Somebody asked me, did it come as a surprise? No, it did not. And people think it's because the minister differed with the board regarding the appointment of the CEO. Well, Pravin is correct in this instance. He said they didn't follow process because they excluded people above the age of 60, which is illegal. They can't do that. They can't say nobody above the age of 60 should apply because it's a 5-year contract, 3-year contract.
What I don't understand with that case, though, where they were told they should have submitted three names, with Andre de Reiter, were the three names submitted? Or was he parachuted?
No. Andre de Reiter was a special case. Remember, Andre de Reiter, we were told, we woke up and Andre de Reiter, remember Andre de Reiter had failed dismally in everything else he did in life. And we were told, we're going to have this guy as the new CEO. Understand? But this is the process that the post was advertised. There was a due diligence followed. And the board just decided, I don't know, but maybe for stability, let us appoint a younger person who will serve 2 terms, maybe 6 years, maybe 10 years. And instead of appointing someone who's about to go on retirement, maybe. That's the logical thing I'm thinking of. There's nothing wrong with that, but don't expressly state it, because then it becomes illegal. Now, Minister Pravin Gordhan goes and sends this thing back, and people are saying the board or the chairperson of the board feels and thinks there's interference from the ministry. I doubt it, and I'll remind our followers why. I was sitting on this platform when Makwana was appointed.
Yes.
And I said, how come nobody talks about what this guy is doing? His connections to the independent power producers. Now, 2 days or less than 48 hours after he resigned, Minister Pravin Gordhan institutes a probe to say his background and his sources of business must be checked. I, Mudimu Amemuilwa, said on this platform, why didn't they check it, do due diligence before the guy was appointed? Why do you let him resign? You issue a public statement to say Makwana has resigned. We wish him well in his career and he will do a handing over in the next 2 weeks. Less than 48 hours after you issue a statement to say, probe this guy. Who's this guy? What was he doing? I think it's a bluff.
Yeah, the due diligence would have actually established done before. All of that.
Yes. Why are they doing it after? Why is it a bluff? Why is Pravin going for Makwana, a black businessman, a black executive? We all don't know, but I don't think he's going for him. I think these people had a plan. Their plan has been well executed with the IPPs and contracts signed and decisions made without a CEO for, you know, his term. But another thing also with Makwana that worries me. As the chairperson, he's staying until month, and guess what? Eskom is one of the entities that did not submit their financial records. He must submit them in handing over. Some of those records, he inherited them. He found the problem there, inherited it, failed to resolve it. Now he must come in front of us, the nation, and present cooked, wrong, lying papers and reports. Why is he subjecting himself to that? You understand? If there's a fallout between Makwana and the minister, Makwana would have left with immediate effect. He's a chairperson of the board. He's not into operations.
Yes.
Why does he want to subject himself to come and stand in front of us as a nation? You know, what does he do to black people and black executives? We are useless. That's what it does. It confirms that blacks are failures. They are useless. He stayed 1 year or more on the post and he did nothing. He's going to present a bleak report, which we all know that he inherited. And he's the chairperson of the board. He's not the CEO. Again, then they go and they appoint a former or executive who has been acting back and forth from the board as well, the deputy chair of the board, to act as the chair of the board. Everybody's acting. Everybody's on stage. We are a movie here. People are in a drama movie where everybody's acting in key strategic positions. And this takes me back to what we spoke about last week, where Floyd Shivambo said that they want to weaken the ANC by taking strategic positions. The CEOs, COOs, the CFOs, ambassadors, and all the DGs and all that. You can't run a government entity or department without the chief accounting officer for over a year. And you know that it's strategic. You know, the prescripts are there. You know the people that you must recruit. Why are they not recruiting the normal people and relevant people? I don't think, and this is my conclusion on this matter to our followers and viewers, I don't think there's a fallout between Makwana and Pravin Gordhan. I don't think so. I think they are playing into the gallery. I think they are misleading us. There's no fallout. Otherwise, the guy would have left immediately. And this whole thing, it's a farce, but Eskom is getting more and more into trouble. And look, call it Botsang's conspiracy theories. Pravin is selling state-owned enterprises, and he's selling them smart. First of all, you dislocate them. You make them dysfunctional. You don't give them support and oversight. You make them useless so that cabinet can come in or parliament and say, no, let's privatize this thing, like the way they sold the South African Airways. The former DG in that ministry is sitting at home or in that department, is fighting the minister because he raised issues regarding the sale of SAA. Now the Auditor General has come to confirm some of the things that the DG of state-owned enterprise or state entities has alleged before. The Auditor General says the sale of SAA was not handled properly. Did the DG lie? No, it says it was. He didn't lie because now a Chapter 9 institution is coming to confirm what the DG was saying. And this is the whole political strategy of dismantling state-owned enterprises, privatizing them, making political office bearers who are about to go on retirement and they've looted money to can buy these enterprises out. You know, again, South Africans do not know that this week an electricity bill was tabled. That Eskom is being dismantled. Three, now it's going to be three different, you know, entities doing different things under one ministry. Let's hope ministry of what? Of electricity. Yeah, let's hope.
Probably electricity.
Yeah. So Dr. Sputler, Khosiyetso Ramokhoba, is going to inherit a dismantled Eskom, with problems and false reports or incorrect reports. And then he'll be sitting with the problem. You know what we will be doing after the 2024 elections? We'll be saying, but Sputla is useless. Forgetting that Sputla is inheriting in 2023 towards 2024 the mess that was created by Pravin Gordhan. And people will sit back and say, no, we can't be giving these key strategic positions to black people because they are failing. No. I will not be saying that next year. I will not say Sputla has failed. I will say Sputla has inherited a rotten bag of potatoes.
Yes.
And he didn't go and throw away the rotten one. He's trying to clean, you know, and cut and remove the rotten part of a potato and put them back in the bag with fresh ones. And that is what is happening in the South African politics.
Sure.
And those who are young and supposedly good are being given a rotten sack of potatoes. And they just take it and run with it without questioning things. But, you know, in the public service, that's another thing. If you question political leadership, you'll find yourself sitting at home.
It becomes personal.
It becomes personal.
Absolutely. Let's wrap it up with the murderous mayhem in the Middle East. What's happening in the Middle East, Botsang, and what are your...
Fresh, this is the sad state of us. What is happening in the Middle East, it's actually genocide. If you look at it, actually, I had to sit and think about this, and I will take sides. You know, as an analyst, I'm supposed to sit here and give a picture of both sides of what is happening. The only picture I can give regarding what is happening in the Middle East is that that's a holy war, that's a jihad. And this war has been there long before we were born. And it's a structural war that was well designed by the British. We all know it's on record that when there was a Holocaust against the Jews, Britain, the foreign minister of Britain, actually in those 40s, went and developed a paper and tabled it in Parliament of the British Parliament, and it was approved that the state of Palestine, which is supposed to be a holy place. And somebody was saying, why did they choose Palestine? Why not Egypt? Why not any other country? Why were the Jews? Because already there were Jews living in the area, you know, based on their religion. But they created a state of Israel inside Palestine. And people are saying the Palestine situation is the same as South African situation, whereby colonialists came. Then they became racist, you know, apartheid government. They took over the land that they still own, over 70% of the land in South Africa. But in Palestine, it's worse. I think the situation with the Palestinians is worse than South Africa. You know, the apartheid government was racist. They used race as their weapon. And I don't want to talk 1948 backwards. I want to talk 1948 moving to 1994. They used race and segregation. They created homeland states in Palestine. Israel didn't do that. They actually started occupying Palestine piece by piece. Right now, over 90% of Palestine belongs to Israel. And America is arming Israel to keep that to happen. They want that to happen. So, I mean, Palestinians are very few people, 2 million plus. And with the bombings that are happening by Israel, supported by America with the F-16 jet fighters, bombing the Palestinian people every day. 2 million, if they can kill 2,000 a day, imagine, or a week, imagine what will be 2 million people. They want to actually finish the people of Palestine. And we should, as a nation, and South Africa has stood up. I'm very proud with Minister Naledi Pandor. I think I praise her too much these days. Or is she saying the right things? Minister Naledi Pandor's statement, very bold. A lot of South African organizations, obviously, except the Jewish community in South Africa and the Democratic Alliance, they've called for Israel to defend itself against what they call the terrorist Hamas. The word terrorist comes from terror. You cause terror. You terrorize people. Israel, and people were asking, why did it happen this weekend? But for the last 2 months, Israel has been bombing Palestine. It's not reported on ENC. It's not reported on BBC. It's not reported on CNN or any niche Western media houses. They've been bombing them at least 3 times a day. Imagine how many children are dying. And now people are saying in a war situation, you cannot be kidnapping and killing women and children. You know, that irked me. Are they saying we as men, it's okay when we are kidnapped and killed? You know, killing is wrong generally. Killing people is wrong generally, whether it's women, men and children. But when it's Hamas, And I don't want to say the state of Palestine. Hamas, it's a militant organization in Palestine, has decided to say enough is enough. We can't allow our people or the people we represent to be bombed and killed. They are armless. They are normal civilians. We have arms. Let us go and avenge them. It's called terrorism. But when the innocent children of Palestine are being bombed and killed with artilleries that are used by the military, not normal guns that are used by criminals. That's not terrorism. And then we have the United States and Britain and other countries standing up to say they will aid Israel by all means necessary to defend themselves. And none of the Arab countries, none, not even one, with the exception of Iran, has said we will defend the people of Palestine. Again, so it's a sad state that the people of Palestine are finding themselves to fight in this jihad or a holy war on their own for their land. They are dispossessed, they are being killed, they are oppressed. And what do we expect them to do? First, if you are under attack, the first thing that comes into your mind is to defend yourself. And in a military process, the best form of defense is attack. And that's what Hamas is doing. They are responding and retaliating to the aggression of Israel, you know, in their own land.
Many are arguing that Hamas do not represent the hopes, wishes, and aspirations of Palestinians, and that they are just a terror group.
Who do they represent? If people are saying that Hamas has been existing, what are the hopes and aspirations of Palestinians? That's what we should first identify. The Palestinians, they want their land back. They want peace. They want freedom. At the moment, the people of Palestine, even before this weekend's war, they can't walk freely, fly and travel out of Palestine as they wish. That is oppression. They are like in a, you know, I call Palestine an open-air jail. They are jailed by Israel. Israel determines when will they get water, when will they get electricity, when will they get food. They've been doing it for years. It didn't start this weekend. Now, if we compare Hamas with the former liberation movements in South Africa and their military, the Umkhonto West is the Azanian People Liberation Army, APLA, and Azanla, are we saying Umkhonto West, Israel, APLA and Azanla, they were not representing the aspirations of black people in South Africa? They were. In their different policies, different formats. For example, we used to say, as you know, coming back from the military background, we used to say as APLA, we are not going to put bombs in dustbins around Joburg to bomb shops like OK Bazaar those years. We will actually take our arms and walk into military barracks and police station to attack what we used to call the settler regime, armed soldiers and police. Now, Hamas is doing exactly the same thing. Hamas is sitting there and saying, these people are killing innocent civilians. We will go into Israel, occupied territories, and kill innocent in retaliation to that. I'm not saying killing, and again, we should be careful. I'm not saying killing people and human beings and civilians is correct. But in absence, this is a war situation. This is not just skirmishes where Hamas is mad. But I think Hamas is representing the people of Palestine. Let me tell you, if Hamas was not representing the people of Palestine, they may not be the official government or the official army or military. But if they were not representing, you know, what will the Palestinians be doing? They would be exposing them. They will be telling the Israelis and other international, you know, infiltrators like the USA, where these people are hiding them. The fact that you hide a guerrilla or a soldier in your house, it means you agree with the conduct of that soldier. The fact that the people of Palestine and even surrounding areas like the Hezbollah group in the neighboring country and Iran are supporting Hamas, it is because they can understand and subscribe to the frustration of Hamas. It's a very dirty and unfair situation that majority of the people who are dying there are not guerrillas or soldiers, are civilians. And the youth of Palestine, if you look at the videos that are making rounds, is being wiped off. They are wiping off Palestinians from the system, and we are going to wake up that the entire Palestine now, already it's over 80, almost 90% of Palestine is Israel. And are we as an international nation saying it is correct that another state, not individuals like in South Africa, the British and the Dutch came and fought and divided the country into four and started sharing it. Here it's a state that was an independent state guided by Britain, funded by and armed by the USA, taking over another state. And it happened in Ukraine. And we are saying what to Putin. Mm. Putin, you are taking over another country. It started as Donbass. Now Putin has taken almost a quarter of Ukraine. And we are condemning that to say you can't break international laws by occupying another state. But when it comes to Israel and the children of Palestine in Gaza or in the West Bank, they even deny them access to clean water and food. And this did not start now. And the international community, they want to see then call for peace in terms of war. There is a war situation in that country. And if you take water and food from me, even if you don't shoot me with a bullet, you actually destroy me and kill me. And I've said, when we did a chapter on my private life, I've quoted Hamas that one of the things that we had copied as APLA from Hamas was this profound statement. Hamas is saying, if somebody makes life a heaving hell, a living hell for you, that there's no reason for you to live, then why do you still want to live in hell? You must go down fighting that person and, if possible, die instead of living in hell, but die with those people. They live by those words. They are doing it. That's why we find suicide bombers. Instead of me living in a prison cell without water and food, why should I live? I'm dead already. I'll die a painful, slow death. Mm. I would rather fight the oppressor who's denying me food and water and die fighting than starve and be dehydrated to death. And that is the reality. That is the situation that Israel is actually starving and denying the Palestinians basic human living conditions, basic water and food. Now, what do we expect the people of Palestine to do in this instance? And they fight with what? Rocks, kedi, you know, those things. That's where it started. Now they are armed. And guess what? Which arms are they using? American arms. Where did Hamas get those grenade propellers, those rocket launchers? Where did they get them? Because they're made by America. They're American products. Why are they in the hands of Hamas? If you want to see how evil the USA is, I will not be surprised that in order to continue the conflict there, which is benefiting them, they may have made sure that these arms are loose and they will end up in the hands of the enemy of Israel so that America can benefit. That's what America does. But I think the Arab League, the Arab countries must stand up and interfere in this process. And unfortunately, Israel is heavily armed to the teeth. You know, I wouldn't be surprised that they may unleash nuclear weapons on the children of Palestine.
Can I tell you my thoughts on this?
I would love to hear your thoughts.
Because for me, and I'm not the Buddhist here, you're the Buddhist. For me, I think any life lost is unfortunate. I think justifying the killing of anyone, personally for me, doesn't make sense. Just from a bar to people.
Humanitarian perspective.
Absolutely. So I'm not going to sit and justify why innocent men, women, children were butchered this past weekend. But I'm also not going to justify why innocent women and children are being bombed right now. I don't think that is how we can and should be resolving this. So what Hamas did, I'm not going to justify it as a, they had it coming. Now look where you are. There's no part of me that can justify that. But there's also no part of me that can justify dropping bombs indiscriminately like has been happening right now. And all I can say, though, is this wound has been festering for so long. Let's not act surprised that we are here.
Exactly, Fresh.
This wound has been festering because the United Nations are useless when it comes to superpower aggression, when it comes to countries that are connected doing as they please, when it comes to Botswana, who's bigger than Papi, saying, Papi, I'm going to take that, and there's nothing you can do about it. And the United Nations do nothing because Botswana is connected,
exactly.
And Botswana has friends who are also big. So all I'd like to say is it's going to carry on like this, because nothing is changing. And nothing changes if nothing changes. You know what I mean?
I agree with you, Flesh.
So I don't know how we resolve this, but what I know, though, is things have been wrong for at least 60 years, and nobody has done a thing about it.
They will not.
Now we are here. It will get worse, and we're going to continue seeing more women, children, innocents dying because nothing has been done in 60 years.
But just to add to what you are saying, being an analyst,
yeah.
Remember, I have a responsibility to paint a picture of why is it happening.
Absolutely.
And
absolutely.
Painting a picture does not mean one is taking sides.
Absolutely.
But in this instance, I will not be shy that should I be asked to put my head on the block, I will take sides with the people of Palestine. Mm. But I'm not justifying the conduct and the behavior of Hamas.
Sure.
And exactly what you are saying. Ask me, will this be resolved? Diplomatic relations have failed. Mm. You are correct, the UN has failed. Remember when we grew up, we used to adore and admire Yasser Arafat.
Oh, yes. No.
Imagine how many times did the late Palestinian leader, Yasser Arafat, from the time he was the leader of the Palestinian Liberation Organization, before it became a government, he always spoke of engagements for peace sake. For that, let us live as Muslims, as Palestinians, in a humanitarian way. That was Yasser Arafat's position for many years. And what did the United Nations and the US and the British do? No, they kept on allowing Israel to grow. So I doubt if diplomatic relations in this instance, because of the superpowers who are controlling the UN, will aid this situation. It will not. It has been getting worse, as you said. But sadly, it's loss of life. I see this getting out of hand, whereby other countries who are not involved there. The world is shifting.
Mm.
The focus is shifting from the West to the East, and Africa and the Middle East. I see other countries getting involved into this. Already, Russia has already said Hezbollah said they are getting involved into this, which is the equivalent of Hamas in Jordan. There's a group of insurgents from Syria, and Russia is saying, if Syria is attacked, because the U.S. president with his diapers has already stood up and said, I warn you, don't. Mm. He is involved.
Mm.
America is directly involved. They are saying to Israel, we'll give you fighter jets to continue bombing Palestine. But he's saying other countries must not get involved. What if China and Russia and other countries with big military stands up, like Korea? What if the mad young boy of North Korea stands up and saying, I'm going to arm Hamas the way America is arming Israel in this instance?
In fact, to speak to your conspiracy that you alluded to earlier on, how do we know that Hamas were not armed by them?
Yeah.
Because the minute allegiance with Israel was announced, shares in American arms companies shot up.
Absolutely. That's how America operates the economy.
They shot up. So you can't blame a conspiracy theorist who says, how do we know that you're not the same one who's arming the people we're fighting against?
Yes.
So that you can get involved at the level that you're getting involved.
And that's how America has always been operating when it comes to wars. They go, they create chaos so that their economic shares of their country that is being run through the military must go up. And this does not come as a surprise. Do you want to tell me that Israel has one of, if not the number one best intelligence, Mossad, in the world?
Mm.
Do you want to tell me that they didn't hear and see this coming? Egypt stood up and said, but we warned Israel that this thing is coming. How did Egypt pick it up? The CIA and Mossad didn't pick this up. How did they not know that Hamas is planning to do this? And those who know history, they will tell you that almost every 3 to 5 years, there is such an operation by Hamas. Mm. If you look for the last 30 years, almost every 3 to 5 years, there is such a big operation. This is the biggest, in magnitude that has happened. But almost 3 to 5 years, Hamas will attack Israel inside Israel. There'll be casualties of civilians, and then Israel will retaliate. And then America will come at the end and say, Israel, we are ready to help you. No. It's because their capital, their investment on arms and the military, is going to parachute the dollar and the investment rates of armaments and arm companies. And that's what they do. It is in the best interest of the Americans for this war never to end.
And on that note, we'd like your comments, your views, your thoughts. Please also subscribe, like, tell your friends, tell your grandmother, send this to your favorite politician. But we appreciate your comments on our YouTube channel at the bottom. Botsang likes to go in there once in a while and also interact with you guys. But we're going to leave it at that.
Yes, my brother. Thanks a lot.
We've been speaking nonstop for an hour.
Really? Oh God. Yeah, maybe it's because the topics this week has been... what a week. Actually, it's a hell of a week. It is, politically in South Africa and globally.
Yes, sir.
Very challenging week.
Where do we find you online, sir?
Botsangm@gmail.com, or you can go at Botsangm on all social media handles. And you may also inbox or send me SMS and WhatsApp on 082-485-9100.
And on that hashtag politics note, we are done for the week. Coming to you live from AMP Studios, downtown Johannesburg. We are part of the Africa Podcast Network. Shout out our cinematographers, Trevor and his crew at Pezulu Works, works with an X. They even do weddings. They'll shoot your wedding like it'll look happier than it is, guys. Even if you're miserable at your own wedding, Trevor will make you look like, this one is very, very happy. He's Will Smith happy 10 years ago. Also, shout out Otis the Flow Fraser. He does all of our imaging, our guest Botsang Modimowame Muilwa, our creative producer Krivesh Mohan, and our show producer Keleso Modisakeng. Have an incredible week in spite of yourselves. We'll see you again next week.